Right. So this is Center for the Study of Religion and the City, COVID-19 Relief and Restoration Work. Today is October 22nd, 2020. This is Abel Gomez with Ariel Mejia interviewing Siobhan Terrell of Black Church Food Security Network. All right. So in our last meeting, we talked about, we did like an overview of the organization, and we talked quite a bit about the food apartheid and the ways in which Black communities have been historically dispossessed of land. And so we talked about how the organization is working to make Black communities food secure by focusing on the particular needs of the community and allowing the community to lead the efforts towards ensuring that the community has all the things that it needs. And in particular, we talked about how the organization is drawing on insights, teachings, histories of leaders in the Black church and the civil rights movement. And we talked about the ways in which the organization is trying to organize Black farmers to have their produce accessible to Black communities, so it creates a self-sufficient loop. And we also talked about some of the work around teaching folks within the community how to eat healthy and how to make their own medicines through herbal plants.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's just like some of the overview. And so today we're going to be talking a bit more about how the organization has adapted and changed in the wake of the coronavirus. So to start, I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about some of the biggest struggles or challenges that the organization has faced as a result of social distancing.
So the biggest challenge that we have faced thus far as a result of social distancing is situated in our Soil to Sanctuary Market program. So our Soil to Sanctuary Market program is where we transform parking lots, dining halls, multi-purpose rooms into mini farmers markets. Because of social distancing, we are unable to host our Soil to Sanctuary Market in churches. Due to the fact that a large percentage of our community and church congregants are in that high risk category. So we don't want to put anyone in jeopardy, anyone in the position that they will compromise their health. It has been difficult because a lot of churches have transitioned to virtual worship, and a lot of churches aren't holding traditional church worship in the same way before. So everything has moved to being virtual. So that's a challenge that we have had around that program. But we have overcame that challenge by pivoting our Soil to Sanctuary Market into a Black church supported agriculture program, which is very similar to the CSA model, the community supported agriculture model, where we buy bulk purchases from Black farmers in Virginia, North Carolina, and Maryland. And we sell those items wholesale to churches because a lot of churches in this time of COVID and social distancing, they have established food pantries and food distribution programs for their members and for their communities. So we are ensuring that we are still providing nutrient-dense, nutritious food from Black farmers to our communities up here in Maryland.
So just as the churches have gone virtual, there has then been this new way of kind of without having to do like contact, right? Like delivering food so people still have the resources that they need.
Yes. So instead of, you know, having everyone concentrated in a small space, we instead have pivoted to having boxes, like produce boxes, where individuals can come pick up during a lot of times those same items.
And are those like pick up at like at your office or at particular churches?
So it's actually up to the discretion of the church. So we have so far 3 churches who are actively participating in it. So we started this program in September. So far we have done 2 distributions. So the churches are located, one church is located in Montgomery County, Silver Spring. Another church is located in Northern Virginia, and another church is in Baltimore, Maryland. And each church has a different model. Excuse me. So the church that's in Silver Spring Kingdom Fellowship, they actually have, they're actually serving as a distribution site. So every Saturday, you know, cars will come pull up to the church and then they would drop the CSA boxes off with the respective person in that car or with families. Little River UCC and Pleasant Hope Baptist Church, Little River is in Northern Virginia, Pleasant Hope Baptist Church is in Baltimore. Their models are very similar where they have internal CSA programs for their members. So they created an online form for their members to like prepay for the items that we have coming from the farmers. And then they will come to the church, I think either Saturday morning, I think with Little River, come to the church and pick up those boxes. And at Pleasant Hope Baptist Church, it's a hybrid. So they will either come to the church and pick up those boxes or the coordinator would drop the boxes off to the families.
And then what you're saying is that this is something that is happening even beyond just Baltimore, but into other states as well.
Yes. Yes. It's definitely catching fire or catching wind. A church reached out in Omaha, Nebraska, wanting to replicate what we are doing here in Omaha.
I'll hand it off to you, Arielle, if you have a question.
I think my question was kind of answered. So, like, these churches will, like, give out, like, the food to, like, the community, like, and then the people will just come and pick the food up, correct?
Yes.
Because, yeah, they have that. I know in where I'm from, they started doing that ever since coronavirus started. They'd the churches would give out free food and like people can go and pick it up early in the morning and stuff. So
it's the same way. But a lot of churches receive their food from like food pantries and Maryland Food Bank. And a lot of those items are highly processed. So we still want to, you know, maintain the integrity of the organization by providing nutritious food to our communities by supporting Black farmers.
Well, and it's something that you mentioned in our first interview that I think feels relevant is you mentioned that the idea is trying to keep it all within community so that there is not a dependence on outside organizations. And so it seems like the particular work of connecting with Black farmers rather than food pantries is what addresses that. Is that correct?
Yes, that is spot on. Because like I mentioned before, I think in the last conversation is a lot of people have been reaching out to farmers for donations. And that has been putting a strain on that farmer business and their enterprise. So we want to leverage the buying power and the purchasing power that we have as a community to support our Black farmers who would then thusly support us in return by giving us nutritious food.
And so as we're talking about, you know, churches going virtual and this, you know, CSA, which, you know, in some ways has less of an in-person contact, could you talk a bit about how the organization has maintained a sense of community in the context of social distancing?
That's a great question. So one of the things, like our pillars as an organization, is centered around like relationship building. And we try to look at everyone or try to build a bond with everyone that we come in contact with as being a part of our family. Because we know that building micro food systems will not happen overnight. But it will happen through like consistent communication. So to maintain like open lines of communication during this time, we have like introductory calls, like one-on-one conversations with our churches around ways that we can support each other during this time. We have also developed or created a Facebook group for our member churches where they are able to share resources with each other, post pictures about their harvest and what they are currently doing, as well as we have been leveraging the power of social media. We have been leveraging the power of social media to really tell our story during this time and to really make people feel like they're there with us. So when we do our food distribution program, like I have timestamps for every action that we do. So we start at 6 p.m. We drive the truck down at 7 p.m. to make people feel like they're there with us, engaging with us. Also, we have been extremely active on YouTube, hosting tutorials, how-to videos. We just wrapped up a food preservation series on how to make how to turn cucumbers into pickles, how to turn tomatoes into tomato sauce, and apples into applesauce. So we are really like listening to our community around like, what would you like to know about agriculture? Because we understand that everyone isn't gonna put their hands in the soil. Some people are afraid of bugs and that's perfectly fine. But what we are trying to do is to show that our culture, or trying to reconnect with our culture as it relates to agriculture. And there are so many different ways to do that. So we are providing avenues for everyone to do so. Or as our founder, Pastor Brown, would say, we provide different on-ramps for people to get connected back to their food and agriculture.
I like how you brought up social media, because I feel like a lot of people now just use Zoom as a way to connect, but like you guys seem to be like using something different, like posting on YouTube how-to videos and like just posting on like social media, like updating people on what's going on. So I feel like that's so useful because it gets kind of like tiring just sitting on Zoom, and you guys are like doing something different. So
yeah, I think social media is an underrated tool. So I wouldn't even say underrated. I think people know the power of it, but people don't know how to leverage the power of it. And that's what we are trying to tap into in this moment, like to increase engagement, to create a community on social media, to show people like the behind the scenes of the work that we're doing. Because, you know, a lot of people, when they hear the word church, so many different barriers come up, so many different ideas and what church means to you. But we're saying, like, we are a community. We don't have to have the same, like, religion. We don't have to have the same faith. But what we are doing is feeding our community through the resources that we have readily available. So we're just showing people the different personalities of our organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one of the things that I think is really cool about social media is how it really makes, it allows many different kinds of people who have, you know, a whole spectrum of resources to actually tell their story and become accessible and kind of show what an organization or community is all about. Mm-hmm. And so, like in my research, I've noticed how tribal communities that have very little resources are able to use social media, which is free,
yeah,
to mobilize all kinds of support to like protect sacred places and to stand in solidarity with various other justice causes, especially in the context of COVID. I kind of want to go back to something that you mentioned a moment ago, which was you used the phrase micro food systems. And I'm wondering if you could just say a little bit more about what that means.
Yes. So before this year, our mission was to create a grand food system. But getting back to the idea and the definition of food sovereignty, which allows people to define their food ways in their community. So getting back to that and acknowledging and embracing that definition, we acknowledge that micro miniature food systems is sustainable in addressing the needs of the community. It keeps the food travel miles low, as well as it keeps the community at the center of it rather than, you know, market demands and the bottom line of making it work. So an example of a micro food system is like what we are doing here currently in Baltimore with the BCSA program. So far we are engaging with food production with the Black farmers who we source the food from, food distribution where we transport the food from North Carolina to Baltimore, and food consumption as well as marketing. Marketing is a component of the food system that isn't often talked about. So far we are engaging in that in this three-day distribution timeline that we have for the BCSA program. But also like micro food systems can also be acknowledging like food waste and composting. Many of the churches that we work with, they have compost bins. So the food that, you know, is compostable or the food that goes unsold or not eaten can be used to go back into the compost to create soil. So that and itself, like those two components is an example of like a micro food system. Because I think when we think about food systems, we think about, oh my gosh, we got to have all of these components and we gotta have a truck, a refrigerated truck. We need to have storage. We need to have refrigeration, but also acknowledging like we have to start somewhere. And we can start with just acknowledging or just embracing and engaging with the production side of it, or just embracing and engaging with the food waste side of it. So we are starting where our churches are and where their interest lies, and then using that as a starting point to build out.
Okay. Yeah, that's so fascinating. Ariel, do you have a question?
I don't have a question right now. Just okay. Taking it all in. I've never heard of a micro food system, so I think it's pretty interesting.
Could you kind of to another topic? Could you talk about how the organization has observed cultural or religious celebrations during this time?
Yes. Had time to think about it. So at the end of our campaign, so we had a Faith, Food, and Freedom summer campaign that ran throughout the 95 days of summer. And at the end of it, we had a big harvest party, acknowledging and being grateful for the farmers who kept us fed during these uncertain times, you know, who sacrificed family hours to make sure that we have food on our plate during these times. So we had a harvest party to celebrate that. And this is something that has been done culturally throughout history, but it has lost like its popularity over time. Some churches call it homecoming when people who have left the church come back, like in the spirit of like, you know, school homecoming, coming back as a big celebration, have barbecues, different things like that. So we wanted to like bring in that energy to our harvest party by lifting up the phenomenal tireless work of farmers and also acknowledging like food makers and food producers. So during that celebration, we had a food preservation class. So we had an elder in our community come in to teach us how to make, I think it was cucumbers. I mean, I keep saying cucumbers, how to make pickles. And we also ended it with like a performance from Anthony Brown and group therapy, because that is so important to our culture. Like I think one thing about that I have identified about Black culture is like we are musically inclined. Like I don't know, it may not just be specifically for Black culture, but I can just speak on that. But it's like music speak in ways that, you know, verbal words cannot, right? So we wanted to have an opportunity where people can just like let their hair down, remove themselves to the different stressors of life, but have a safe place where they can just celebrate and feel good. So that's one cultural festival that we had. And another one is like just religious. It's like Sunday worship. So we have been discussing about how can we like connect our programs to Sunday worship, because that is something that's gonna happen every Sunday in the church. So we have been including like announcements about our programs, announcements about our trainings, announcements about volunteer days, to get the word out about what we're doing.
And the homecoming party, that was through Zoom?
So no, that wasn't through Zoom. It was actually pre-recorded. It's on our YouTube. So our YouTube channel is the Black Church Food Security Network.
Okay, so there was a pre-recorded, and then like at some point, like the link was distributed, and so people were able to kind of watch that and with their families or households kind of join in that way.
And then the
Sunday worship, where announcements about trainings and things like that is like over Zoom.
So that's pre-recorded as well.
Got it.
So like what things do you guys do on Zoom?
So Zoom, when COVID first hit, we were hosting our DIY series on Zoom. So we will meet every Saturday from March until May, I believe, hosting like how-to videos. One of our series was called Grocery Store Gardening, How to Regrow Commonly Purchased Items from the Grocery Store. We also had trainings around like seed saving and how to start seeds inside, and even like the basics, like how to read the back of a seed packet. So we did that for, I believe, 2 months. But we have transitioned away from doing stuff live, you know, to control the uncertainty of, you know, Wi-Fi connection and different things like that. So we have transitioned to pre-recorded, and we premiere it as if it was live on our YouTube and our social media. But actually, currently we are hosting a 5-week In Hunger training with St. Luke's Church in Orlando, and that is actually through Zoom. So that one is live. And we stream it on Facebook, and it's just streamed on Facebook.
And some things have been like streamed through Instagram as well, right?
So Instagram don't really have like the streaming capability like Facebook, where you can stream something live. Well, Instagram got Instagram Live. But, you know, Facebook allows you to stream on Facebook and YouTube at the same time with, like, StreamYard platform. But Instagram, we will have to actually have Instagram Live specifically for it. But most of the time, we just upload our pre-record content on Instagram.
I it's been interesting seeing how, like, I've been part of conferences now where, like, they'll have participants record their paper or their presentation ahead of time. And like you mentioned, like, then streaming it as if it were live, which then allows people, I mean, as you mentioned, to deal with all kinds of, like, the uncertainties of they lose the Wi-Fi, or, like, if they, like, trip over their words or whatever, then they can, like, do another take.
Yes, that's so important. And I'm actually doing a panel in December, the first week. I think it's December the 3rd. And they want it to be pre-recorded as well. So we have to set up a pre-recording date. And then they're just going to stream it the day of the conference. It really keeps logistics, you know, at a minimum.
And so on that note, are there new rituals or practices that the organization has developed to deal with this particular moment or in response to social distancing?
So externally, no, because we try to keep our engagement with the community low, since our core group are people who are high risk. But internally, during COVID, you know, there's just so many stressors that's happening now, social distancing, COVID, work-related. So one of the rituals that we have now is, like, before we speak to anyone on the team, we got to do the basics. Good morning, good afternoon, how are you doing? How did you sleep? And then going into the conversation. So first acknowledging, like, their humanness first, and acknowledging where they currently are, and what is their current, like, mental health state, before we get into the work.
I think that's super important, because I feel like some people just rush into, like, conversations that are very sensitive without just, like, oh, how are you? Good morning. Like, how's your day? Like,
yeah. Yeah. Especially now. I mean, there's just so much going on, and I'm like, it's 8:00 and you need to email me and text me this early. Like, for my sanity, I can't respond until 9:30. Like, but yeah, I think that is so important to just acknowledge the person first. I mean, I guess that's why there's so much going on now around, like, people over profit. That also is connected to people who are doing, like, community-based work. It's like, the work is going to always be there, but that person may not, right? And then that person, you know, there's just so many different, like, connections to stress and how it affects your health. But just acknowledging that first and holding space for it.
We talked today about the CSA work and the DIY series on Zoom and a bunch of other online programming. Can you speak about what sorts of things that you're doing now, or that you've done kind of in response to COVID, that you'll continue to do when social distancing is no longer necessary?
That's a great question. So one thing is this BCSA program that we created. This BCSA program is going to be our feature program. A lot of churches are really taken to it. And they want this to be sustained. And we are thinking through, like, how can we grow this similar program in other areas, like in Georgia and South Carolina. And like I mentioned, a church and a pastor is interested in Nebraska. But how can we replicate the same model in communities across America? And another thing that has been working really well is those DIY series. People want to learn about agriculture, and they want to learn the basics of agriculture. And people want to learn cultural food ways, such as food preservation, spices, cooking, nutrition. So that's something that we will continue as well.
All right, so I'm going to go back to the last conversation because I had a question. So besides, like, acknowledging humanity, like, what else do you guys do for, like, you know, dealing with, like, how do I want to say it? Like, mental health and, like, checking in and stuff?
Yeah. So every meeting we have check-in, like, hold space for a check-in. How are you feeling today? What's on your mind today? And our team is so close-knit, we will know when someone is off. So we will know when something is wrong in someone's psyche. And just holding space for that conversation. And one of the things that I had to personally, like, adopt in my, like, work routine was, like, daily naps. That's really, like, therapeutic for me. So just telling the team, like, from 3 to 4:30 p.m., I'm taking a nap. I have to because I need it, because I know that I'm the type of person that will overwork. I'm the type of person that would be a workaholic. Like, I will work all day if I have to get it done. But just being patient with myself in this moment and making space for rest. Because one of the things I learned during COVID is that rest is actually a form of resistance. And rest is actually a form of self-care and self-preservation. So we do hold space for that. So the executive director, Pastor Brown, is a pastor of a church. He preaches on Sundays, and his weekends are usually taken with church-related activities. So on Mondays are his day off. So we know on Mondays not to contact him, not to schedule any meetings, because that is his self-care day. So we hold space for people to make time for self.
So kind of on a related note, I have a question, which is sort of on a sensitive, in a sensitive area. So, you know, please don't feel obligated in any way to answer it. We can skip over it. But I'm wondering if you could speak about how the organization has helped members or the larger community deal with loss, if at all, in the context of this virus.
That's so good. And we have been having a conversation around that, around, like, what is our role as an organization? Like, we are a faith-based organization, but our mission is also to build a food system. So where is this fine line that we're working with? Like, being in community with people, but also staying true to our mission. And that's one of the reasons why we have decided to have that harvest party. Is to create a safe space for people and to acknowledge all of the pain and the loss in the moment, and to also embrace the fact that we are in community with each other. Like, we are not alone at all in this experience. And another thing that we have been talking about doing is for the holiday season is having some like food giveaways or some discounted food giveaways. Where we will pay a percentage of the food for families during the holiday season, because a lot of families aren't going to be in close contact and in close proximity on Thanksgiving and Christmas like they used to. So we want to use our resources, you know, to stay, to build that connection with people who may be without family during this holiday season. So we were talking about doing, like, DIY videos on how to make turkey, how to make stuffing, how to make sweet potato pie, to fill in those gaps during this time. And then we were also, since we are a sister organization of Pleasant Hope Baptist Church, and the founder and executive director is actually the pastor of Pleasant Hope Baptist Church, the church has started a mental health initiative, which has actually started last Monday. So they meet every Monday to talk about, you know, mental health and faith, mental health for women, maintaining family boundaries during this time. What are healthy boundaries? Developing boundaries. So creating space for people to share, and also for people to learn from each other and to be in community.
So sort of what I'm hearing is, you know, in addition to, so this moment has brought up this question of kind of where is the interfaith between being an organization that provides food, but also a faith-based organization. And so what I'm hearing then is also a lot of thought and energy around how to broaden a sense of community so that people do not have the sense that they are alone in this moment.
Right. Yes. Correct. I love your paraphrases. I love them.
Well, it's just to try to make sure that like I'm understanding, but also so that you know that like I'm really hearing what you're saying.
I need to work on that. I need to work on being more concise like that.
Well, and it's so interesting because several of the organizations that we've talked about have also mentioned things like mental health. One of the tribal organizations talked about how they have been doing a lot of stuff in particular around wellness and having tribal wellness meetings with therapists specifically to deal with like the uncertainty and kind of the chaos that people find themselves in without work, without having income, if you know their families get the virus or if they get the virus themselves. And as you mentioned, I mean, it's so easy to feel like, you know, in our isolated bubbles that we are doing this as individuals, which of course we never are.
Yeah, we're not. So just, you know, reminding people that you're not alone in this. You have a community around you, and the Black Church Food Security Network is one of those organizations within your community.
Was the other church the one that did the mental health initiative that just started Monday, or was it your church?
It was my church. So Pleasant Hope Baptist Church is the founding church of the Black Church Food Security Network. And the founder, Reverend Dr. Heber Brown III, is actually the senior pastor of Pleasant Hope Baptist Church. So we have strong connections to Pleasant Hope.
You sort of spoke to this a bit before, but could you speak about kind of what resources your members or the communities that you work with most need in terms of how to cope with the effects of the virus?
So since we work with pastors and many of the churches who we work with, we are in community in contact with their pastors. So one thing that I have been seeing is around like how to be a pastor in this moment. Like, what does that mean and what does that look like? Because it don't look the same as being in person and seeing people on a weekly basis. But how can we check in with people virtually on Zoom and make sure that they're engaged in a worship service? So that definitely has been like a transition and a pivotal moment for many churches around like redefining their ministry in the wake of this pandemic.
And what about like the kind of like the community, like on the everyday, like the families or kind of in a smaller scale? Could you speak about kind of what sort of urgent needs or resources that folks need in the wake of this virus?
That's a great question. So the way that our organization is set up is like we are set up as a membership organization.
Okay.
So we are in close contact with churches and religious leaders, and they're the ones who are in contact with people on the ground, with, you know, individual family units. In regards to like your question and how can I answer that, I guess what we have been trying to do is like trying to connect individuals that we come in contact with to those church bases for resources, because we equip those churches with food and resources, and then they have the information to spread to their congregation as well as to their community. But if people are interested in like food preservation or any of those videos that we have on YouTube, then we would direct them to those YouTube videos.
So what I'm hearing is that mostly the like direct contact is with like pastors and with the churches. And then the churches themselves are the ones who are kind of assessing the needs of their congregation.
Right.
But then it also seems like, you know, part of the other thing that you've been speaking to is people are actually really interested in food preservation and eating healthy and nutritiously. So it seems like that is also one of the urgent kind of needs or requests, because if there's so much interest, then clearly it's addressing something that the community is really, really wanting.
Right. Yes, I agree. Just getting back to those cultural food ways that generations have forgotten. And I think now is the perfect time to rekindle those memories and those talents within our communities.
Do you have a question, Ariel?
No, I was just thinking about when you just said rekindle, like, the memories of the past. And, like, since coronavirus has happened, I feel like it seems like your organization is, like, bringing things kind of like how we talked about last time, like the ancestral thing, like rekindling things from the past and stuff. So I think that's so interesting because it seems like a lot of other organizations are doing the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing we're doing is new. we're just getting back to what we know because that has, you know, sustained us throughout the years. So my granddad used to always say, don't fix what's not broken.
And this is precisely what we hear, what we're hearing over and over again from different organizations that, I mean, to put it in other words, right, like the ancestors have created the path.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about learning from and understanding and then respecting these teachings, these traditions, these ways of being that have been passed down. Because as you mentioned, right, it's how the people have survived.
Right.
And sort of on that note, I'm curious to sort of speak about the past. What sort of previous life experiences have you or other members of the organization had that have helped to deal with this particular moment?
Particular moment being COVID?
Yes, the particular moment of COVID, yeah.
That's a great question. So there is, so we are in community with the National Black Food and Justice Alliance, and the national organizer of the alliance, Randolph, one of our past meetings, he said that Black people have always been in crisis in America. And I believe that's true. So just given the current experiences around food insecurity, the wealth gap, the income gap in our communities, it's like our daily lives have prepared us for this moment. We've been learning how to make lemons out of lemonade since day one. We've been learning how to make soul food from, you know, the parts of the cow and the pig that, you know, the plantation owners didn't want. So we've been learning how to use what we have to sustain ourselves during times of crisis. So like I mentioned, so like we've been talking about the ancestors having that blueprint. It's like they gave us the knowledge that we need now for today to get through this particular moment.
Which I think speaks to so much of what I have been noticing, particularly in Black and Indigenous movements and the way that they're responding right now. On the one hand, you know, certain demographics of people in the United States have been responding to this, like, this coronavirus is like, oh my God, this is the end of the world. Like, this is apocalypse. But like Black and Native people have been living in apocalypse, right, for hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, as you're mentioning, right, that moment of crisis actually sparks all kinds of resourcefulness and insights that then become part of like survival strategies, right? In the wake of chaos, like how do people survive? Well, you draw on what has worked previously, right? The historical precedent has allowed for resilience and survival.
Right, yes. And in the spirit of mutual aid, we always had these principles in our community of creating alternative systems to sustain ourselves during times of crisis.
I agree with what both of you guys are saying. Just everything's clicking.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No.
So we're actually at our last question. So we've talked about all kinds of initiatives of the Black Food Church Security Network. We've talked about the ways in which much of what is happening is rooted in ancestral knowledge. We've talked about food sovereignty. We've talked about the historical ways in which Black communities in the United States have been made vulnerable, but also the ways in which communities have imagined alternatives to the chaos and moving towards food sovereignty. And so I'm wondering if there is anything else that you would like folks to know about Black Food Church Security Network in general, the work that you're doing, or other kinds of responses that you think people should know about.
I could just leave with this quote. Those who are closest to the problem are the ones who are closest to the solution.
Awesome. Well, we are going to end there. Thank you so much for chatting with us today.
Thank you.